But amazingly, if you read that section in the Bhagavatam, actually, although it appears that the Lord favored Indra, the conclusion of Shukadeva Goswami was that actually Vitrasura got the benediction, not Indra. And in fact, even though Indra was told by the Brahmins differently, sinful reaction caught up with Vitrasura. And it caught up with him in the form of an old woman chasing him. And she had tuberculosis. And she was wearing bloody garments. And everywhere Indra looked, there was that woman following him. And there was no shelter for Indra. Nobody could give Indra shelter because he had committed the sin of killing a brahmana, and so the sinful reaction was following him. So where would he go for shelter? Finally, Lakshmi gave him shelter in the stem of a lotus, and he was able to escape this curse. The Brahmins had originally told him, "Oh, Indra, don't worry about it. We'll protect you from killing a Brahmin." They tricked him. Therefore, be careful what Brahmins tell you. Prabhupada used to say, check with six Brahmins. Because, according to this, they all tricked him. He wasn't given the right advice. So, Parikshit has this question. It appears that the Lord favors the demigods and does not favor the demons. But we all know from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, that Krishna says himself, I am I'm the same. Samaham sarva bhuteshu. I'm not partial, I'm equal to everyone. But then he does say one thing at the end of that verse. But whoever does something, I have some inclination. Who does Krishna have special inclination for? Devotees. And Prabhupada gives a nice way to understand it. That generally a good person, he's nice to everyone's children, right? I'm sure all of you, you're nice to everyone's children. And if you are very fond of your own child or grandchild, is there anything wrong with that? Right? There's nothing wrong. That's natural. You're nice to everyone, but for your own, you'll get in trouble if you don't show extra affection. The wife and grandma will say, hey, what's the matter with you? So the same way, the Lord is equal to everyone. He's not partial. But he says, but if you render him service, then he's inclined. Same way in the material world, a mother may have many children. In the past, many, many people had big, big families. So the mother loves all the children, but there may be one child that is always seeking extra special attention. So the mother naturally, because that child is always coming, the mother naturally is going to give her attention to that child. That's the fact, huh? Do you have a Vedic shloka to back that up? Or is that from your... that is the Purushottam Sanhita. I'm not questioning it. Yes. I have my Nirantara Sanhita too. Everybody has their personal. Another example Prabhupada gives. Today, was the sun out? Was it shining here in Orange County? Was the sun shining? Yes? So some people, they took advantage of this. Like today, I went for a drive with my wife. We went along the coast and we wanted to see. So we took advantage of the sun. Some people decided, no, it's Saturday, I want to sleep. So they slept till 1 or 2 o'clock. There are some people like that. Some people didn't take it then. Now it's too late, right? The sun has gone to sleep. The sun has died, right? That's a joke. But the thing is, right now, you can't take advantage of the sun. So if someone didn't take advantage of the sun, does that mean the sun is partial? No, the sun was there. All you had to do was come out and take advantage of the sun. Krishna is like the sun. There is that famous shloka from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Surya Sama. Krishna is just like the sun. So Krishna is there for everyone. You have to take advantage. But if you don't take advantage of Krishna, that's Krishna's partiality. Just like the temple is there. There are so many temples. The temple is not partial. The doors are open. Come and see Krishna. If you don't go, whose fault is that? Your own fault. So Krishna is equal to everyone. Everyone can take advantage of Krishna. And we see throughout so many episodes how Krishna is actually equal. Krishna says, how you want to relate to me, I'll relate in that way. You want me to be your enemy? Fine. I'll treat you like an enemy. You want to be my friend? I'll treat you as friend. However you want to relate to Krishna, he's capable of reciprocating. Like when I speak in the high schools and colleges, one of the things, there's one class I do once in a while at Cal State LA, Professor Wilson. She's been inviting devotees to come to her class for over 20 years. So one of her classes is, what is that called? Emotions in Religion. That's the course she teaches. Emotions in Religion. So a couple of times she has asked me. So when I go to that class, I ask the class, all right, first of all, I put on the board the different rasas. First rasa is what? What's the first rasa? Rshanta, passive adoration. Second rasa, dasya, servant. Third rasa, sakya, friendship. Fourth, vatsalya, parent. And then fifth, madhurya, conjugal. So since I've done that class many times over the years, Mrs. Wilson has said, oh yeah, I like that madhurya rasa. And one time I gave her a nectar of devotion. So I said, here, read this and learn properly about madhurya rasa. So when I open the class, I put those five rasas on. And then I begin by asking, okay, how many people in the class are atheists? And you'd be surprised. In a religion class, there are atheists. Because they think, oh, this is an easy class. So, for the atheist, I tell them, obviously, you don't want one of these relationships. You don't want an emotional relationship with God. Okay. Now, I explain to the class what each of these rasas are. And then I say to them, so which one attracts you? Are you attracted to that passive adoration? That, oh, like you see the bumper sticker, God is awesome. Have you seen that bumper sticker sometime? It was very popular in the 90s. God is awesome, man. Wow. But that's true. He is. In that chantaras, you're always in rapture and wonderment and amazement how great God is. Then you go to the next level where not just that God is awesome, but that you want to do something. You want to render some service. So that's a little higher. Then there is friendship, that not only do you have this great appreciation for God and you want to do some service, but by your service, little by little, your relationship with God has become a little more intimate. Just like all of you have different relationships with different people. In the workplace, you're nice to everybody, you're friendly to everybody, but you don't bring everybody to your home from the workplace. Sometimes after the work, yeah, enough of this guy. No, you also have your personal friends, okay? Like these Namahat parties. These are our personal spiritual friends, okay? That means you're a little more intimate with these people than you are your co-workers. Then you have, many of you have children. So that's special, very special. And those of us who are so fortunate, when you have grandchildren, that's even more nice and sweet. Very, very nice. So that's a different kind of, much to have, you know, children. It's very, very nice, close relationship till they become teenagers. Then everything changes. And then the topmost relationship with God is the conjugal relationship. So then I explain to the students, so which one of these attracts you? If none of these relationships attract you, then you're an atheist. But if you're a theist, one of these five relationships should attract you. And you can ask yourself, which one attracts you? Because, by the way, you're a person. You're eternally a person. And the whole goal of what we're doing is to discover what is your eternal relationship with God. And then also you can ask yourself, which God? Because how many forms does Krishna have? Unlimited, right? Some of you may have great attachment for Lord Ramachandra. I met many, many years ago, I met a very nice elderly man. And he liked Krishna, but he had much, much special more affection for Lord Ram. I could see by talking to him and visiting him, he knew everything from the Ramayana. He knew everything. He knew it all. And he appreciated Krishna, but where was his heart? Lord Ram. There's even that story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya visited that Brahman, and every word out of the Brahman's mouth was Ram. Ram. And he was supposed to cook for Lord Chaitanya. And after 3 hours, Lord Chaitanya is waiting for his meal. And Lord Chaitanya is like, where's lunch? And then the Brahman responds. He's actually in Samadhi. And he says, oh, when Lakshman brings the food, then Sita will cook. So Lord Chaitanya could realize, oh, this, he's totally absorbed in Ram. So then he quickly made a meal for Lord Chaitanya. And then the Brahman said to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, there's something paining me in my heart. He said, I can't understand how that sinful Ravan could touch and capture Sita. My mind, when I think about this, I'm so much in anxiety. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, do not worry. Ravan could not possibly touch Sita. He cannot even see her. But the Brahmin was not convinced. So Lord Chaitanya went traveling throughout South India, and he found a particular, I think it's the Kurma Purana. And when he went to that temple to get the Kurma Purana, he wanted to take the actual book to show to the Brahmin. And Lord Chaitanya was so powerful that the Brahmins in that temple, they made a copy of the book and gave him the original so he could show to the, just shows you how powerful Lord Chaitanya is. They gave him the actual book. So Lord Chaitanya came back to that Brahmin and said, here, it's right here in the Matsya Purana, that when Ravan came, the real Sita was taken away and protected and hidden. What did Ravan get? He got a Maya Sita. He got a material, illusory Sita. not the real Sita. As Lord Chaitanya said, Ravan, demons, they cannot even see, what to speak of touch, the real Sita. So the Brahman was happy. So everybody, so you have to ask yourself, do I like that shantaras? Do I like that servitorship? Do I like that friendship? Do I like that parental or conjugal? And then, which personality of Godhead am I attracted to? And there's a very nice sentence in one of Prabhupada's purports. How can you tell what is your original rasa? You can't go on Google and find it out. No possible. Prabhupada says that if you find yourself naturally attracted to a particular lila or a particular incarnation, and you have natural attraction for that, that gives you an idea of what your original relationship with God is. I've just given you something that's worth trillions of dollars. But I don't take any tax. The tax is paid by Kamlesh. So think about that. What lila, what incarnation am I spontaneously attracted? But don't tell anybody. Shh. That's between you and Krishna. Shh. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra. So in this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami gave his answer to Maharaj Parikshit, how the Supreme Lord is equal. He gave the idea that actually, and he said that word, the Lord is nirguna. Remember, I had you repeat that word. So nirguna does not mean that he has no qualities. If nirguna meant that the Lord has no qualities, then we would be impersonalists. We would be Mayavadis. No, nirguna means no what kind of qualities? No, that's a big difference. Because one of the first things you learn in Bhagavad Gita is the difference between material and spiritual. They're not the same. Just as there's a difference between Mayasita and the real Sita. There's a big difference. Ravan got Maya Sita, illusory Sita. Just like, I'll give you a practical example. There's real money, and then there's Monopoly play money. So with a child, you can give, oh, just take this money. See, you have $1 million. But it's Monopoly, it's play money. It's not real. Meanwhile, you have the real money tucked away. So the material energy is play-doh. This whole material existence is an illusory world. And everybody is being cheated out there. It's not reality. The reality is in the spiritual world. Isn't that the first verse of chapter 15 in Bhagavad Gita? Those of you who have read Bhagavad Gita more than once and who read it regularly. Yes, this world is a perverted reflection. That right there, reflection is not the real thing. The real thing is something else. The reflection is different. And then there's that example. The tree on the bank of the lake. The tree is there, but the reflection in the lake, that's not real, is it? And it's upside down, is it not? The top is the bottom and the bottom is the top. The material world is that reflected tree on the lake. And the real tree, that's the spiritual world, which is where we're trying to go back to. There were many, many, there were several times in this narration where it said, first of all, one of the things it was talking about Jai and Vijay, and it said the question was, Yudhishthir was asking Narada, how could liberated souls again go back? That was the exact phrase. How could they again go back? Meaning, they were once here, they went back to Godhead, otherwise why would he say again go back? You don't use again unless something's already happened again. And then elsewhere it said back. Back also implies you were there originally. Just like maybe you heard recently the narration of Tulsi and Tulsi and Sudama, how they were in the spiritual world and Radharani cursed them and they took birth as Tulsi and Shankachud, and then the whole thing. Those of you who attended my class a couple of weeks ago, I told that story from the Puranas, how Tulsi was cursed by Radharani to come here like that. So originally, that's the teaching. Back home, back to Godhead. Twice using the word back, meaning that's where you came from. Isn't that great? Your original home? Right. Not that you've always been a prisoner here. No. So Shukadev, in answering Maharaj Parikshit, he said, what's going on is this. First of all, the Lord himself, Nirguna, no material qualities. He has spiritual qualities. And that we learn from the Brahma Sanghita, that the Lord has spirit. This is such an important point. This is the difference between personalists and impersonalists. The impersonalists say, as soon as you use the word qualities, that means Maya. That's why they're called Mayavadis. Because they say God cannot have any qualities. And that makes them Mayavadis. But the Brahma Sanghita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, we are personalists. We say, no, God has transcendental qualities. Big difference. Big difference. That's why Satchidananda Vigraha. Vigraha means body, form. Yes. We have a form, do we not? But what's the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita? You're not that form, are you? Isn't that the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita? You're not that body, you're not that form. But you have an original spiritual form. And so does Krishna. And it was also mentioned in this narration that the Lord has no material qualities, no material form, but he does have his spiritual form. Otherwise, what is Radharani doing? You think Radharani is embracing a ghost? No, Radharani has her spiritual form. Krishna has his spiritual form. The spiritual world is full of forms, spiritual forms, full of bliss and knowledge. Here in the material world, because it's the perverted reflection, the reflection, again, going back to that whole thing with the perverted reflection, right? The reflection in the lake can only reflect what the object is, correct? Just like your shadow. Your shadow cannot act independently of you. If you move your arm, the shadow does the same thing. It can't. You never had the experience, you go like this and the shadow does something else. It's like, whoa. Then you'd really go crazy. No, the shadow acts according to the object. The reflection can only reflect the actual thing. So this material world, being a perverted reflection, is only a reflection of the reality. And as Prabhupada beautifully says, therefore in the kingdom of God there are houses, there are trees, there are plants, there are people, there are cows. What's Krishna's name? Gopal or Govinda. What do you think Krishna's doing? Going to the office? What does Krishna do every day? Oh, he goes on the 405. No, not that perverted reflection. No. Yes, Krishna is going out every day. What's he doing? Taking care of the cows and calves. But what's he really trying to do? While he's taking care of the cows and calves, what's really going on? Hanky-panky with who? Ah, that's what's really going on. This taking care of the cows and calves is a pretext. All throughout the day, different things are going on between the gopis and the cowherd boys, making that rendezvous in the evening. And then when Yashoda tucks Krishna into bed, she doesn't know that there's a secret side door that Krishna has left open. So when Yashoda tucks Krishna in, she locks the door, and she thinks, oh, Krishna is now tucked into bed. At the right moment, Krishna gets out of bed, sneaks out that side door. The land of Vrindavan mystically takes Krishna to the pre-designated rendezvous spot. Rasa dance begins every day in Goloka Vrindavan. Yes, every day. And some might think, oh, every day? How boring. Ah. Ask Radharani if it's boring. Ask the other gopis if it's boring. That's the difference between the material and spiritual world. Yes, we become very much disturbed by our hackneyed civilization every day. Go on the 405 or the 5. Go to the office. Deal with those stupid, less intelligent idiots. Then come home and then do this. It's like a prison life. But in the spiritual world, Krishna, the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan, every day they're working hard. They're having so much fun being with Krishna. At the end of the day, when Krishna returns with the cowherd boys and cows, and he enters this home, then everybody gets nice. They dress up, bathe, and then there's a big supper. Because in the morning, Krishna didn't eat very much breakfast. He wasn't very hungry. And he put most of his food on Maru Mangala's plate when Yashoda wasn't looking. Because Maru Mangala is my guru. As you can see, I'm just like Maru Mangala. He loves to get food from Krishna's plate. So Krishna's not hungry in the morning. And there's a lunch or something is brought when they're out. But at night, Krishna is hungry. And there's a big supper, and everybody in Vrindavan comes. It's like we're doing these programs, so it's like a big program. And then there's a darshan. Krishna is sitting, and everybody comes, and it's a big party. Then Yashoda comes. All right, everybody go. Well, come on. Krishna has to go to bed. Go, go, go. Get out. Now, of course, Meena and Kamlesh don't do that, but Yashoda does that. Because Yashoda said, Krishna has to go to bed now. And then the whole thing begins again. But every day is new. Every day is exciting. Every day is wonderful. And the whole goal of chanting Hare Krishna is to be able to enter. Prabhupada said in that one tape, the goal of this Krishna consciousness movement is to become one of those gopi jana. So, yes, if you follow in Prabhupada's movement, you should want to become one of those gopi jana and become the servant of 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 who? Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. That is, at least that's what I'm aspiring to be. Yes, I want to become one of those gopi jana. Prabhupada has convinced me. Yes, I don't want to become anything else. I don't want to go and take birth again in this stinking, rotten material world. I'm finished. Been there, done that. I don't want to come back here again. Have to go to school? What? No, I've done that. become a teenager, get my heart broken again? No. Have to work a stupid job for some demon? No. I want to go back home, back to Krishna, and become one of the Gopijana. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra, please.